The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
I love books so much that I read them.
We both read them through first one, then the other, so we get two different perspectives on the same book. I guess that's literally true. We're bad at jokes. We are not professional joke writers.
We don't plan these things ahead of time, and our improv skills are no good.
Arguably, we are not professional anything.
We're not like Queenie, okay?
Okay.
We can't come up with shit off the top of our head.
That's right. What do I look like? A Scottish woman from World War II?
Totally.
Oh, thank you.
I meant to tell you.
Oh, well, thank you.
So I'm Gab.
I'm Ben.
And this week we read Codename Verity by Elizabeth Wine or Wayne or Ween or
one of those.
Wayne.
I like Ween.
Ween.
I'm sure that's the most wrong interpretation of those, but that's the one I like the best.
And we read this book because I actually was driving to work and heard a guy on NPR talking about it, or a woman on NPR. Someone on NPR was talking about it. And so I was buying my mom good YA books for Christmas, because she always complains about not reading good ones when she tries to find them. And I bought her that book because of the recommendation, and then I read it.
And then I read it. Actually, I read it first.
Okay, I read it first. Don't listen to Ben's lies.
I discovered this book, and then I recommended it to Gabs.
I read it and said, hey, this might be a good podcast topic. Burn.
Yep, and I was so enthusiastic, I went back in time and read it first. True story.
Yeah.
There's a lot of deception in this book.
Yeah.
That's my inspiration for being a chode.
For being annoying for the next hour.
Yes.
So
I've been looking for an excuse.
Congratulations, listeners. Welcome to hell. So the genre of the book. One of the... Ben, you'll have to... You're more of the World War II expert. Are there a lot of World War II YA novels?
Well, certainly not that I'm familiar with. I assume there are... Some. Actually, I can think of at least one that I read when I was in school.
Mm-hmm.
It involved kids in Norway and smuggling gold or something. I can't remember much past that.
I guess Number of the Stars is also technically...
I mean, it's a pretty...
The girl helps...
Major historical, cultural event for various reasons to various groups of people. So I'm sure there is... I mean, there's definitely plenty of adult fiction.
Yeah.
And... even more nonfiction that refers to it, and I'd be surprised if there wasn't a pretty equivalent amount of YA as well.
I think this is the first YA World War II book I've read that's about characters who, you know, are directly involved in the war effort.
That's true. I haven't really come across much of that, because this is too... adults, presumably young adults, but it's usually some like 14-year-old kid who's living in a war-torn area or is a member, is Jewish, basically.
Yeah, in this book, we don't really know how old they are, but 18 to 20-ish, probably. So they kind of fall into the YA category, I guess, even though they are, like Ben said, technically adults. The other interesting thing about the book... that I know the author was trying to do was base it around two women involved in the war effort, which is even more rare.
Yeah, I mean, especially from the American and British point of view, you don't get a lot of stories of women in the war. I mean, they certainly had a role, but usually hear it in the industrial or... whack sort of way. I mean, we didn't use women as frontline fighters. Neither did the Axis powers. The Soviets are the one exception to that, who actually did have women on the front lines, and specifically even as fighter pilots, since that relates more directly to this story. But they were quite a bit more desperate than everybody else was as well.
Yeah. Yeah, America was just shipping people over, so...
Well, and for that matter, when Germany got desperate, I still haven't read about women really being on the front lines. They'd have, like, 15 and 65-year-olds holding rifles on the front lines, which is way more fucked up than an adult woman who can make choices holding a rifle in my head, but...
Oh, sexism.
But there you go.
Man, that's fucked up.
Yeah.
As the book is based around World War II, it's obviously also historical fiction, and it's also a spy novel. Kinda.
This is a novel that I kept characterizing as... Well, actually, I shouldn't say this, because it'll kind of spoil our plot synopsis. Also, spoiler alert!
Oh, yeah. We should probably mention that this book... has a giant motherfucking spoiler, multiple spoilers in it, and if you really don't want to be spoiled, you should stop listening, because, like, a lot of shit goes down.
This is a pretty short book. This might be a good one to close the podcast and go read and come back in a few days, if you prefer to do that, because we do spoil everything. In fact, I'm about to. Anyway, we have the two massive spoiler bombs for this book. One, the first half of the book is basically a lie.
Uh-huh.
And two, the character whose point of view the first half of the book is written from gets shot and killed fairly early in the second half of the book.
By her best friend.
Which leads to what I was about to say, our plot synopsis, two girls become friends. Or possibly spies. And that's because when I was reading this book, I couldn't figure out if it's about spies or friendship, but I was pretty sure it was about friendship, and I was pretty sure I was going to be mad if it was about friendship.
We're also a little mad it wasn't a romance. Instead, it was just friendship.
So if it was... with guys, you say bromance. What is it with girls?
Oh, I feel like there is some... maybe just bromance.
Bromance.
I don't know.
I was gonna say that. But I wasn't sure if I.
It's kind of. I thought offensive.
I thought I might get in trouble for that.
Well, that's the first thing that popped into my brain. Girl, the reason there's not a word for it is because girls are expected to be really good friends, and when you see like two close female friends in a movie, you're like, oh, that's just how it works. And when you see guys acting that way, they're like, it's like they're a little bit gay.
That's true. If Frodo and Sam were women, they would still totally be gay, because that's the gayest couple in the history of literature. Bad example, but... Maybe Sherlock Holmes and Watson in the new Sherlock Holmes movie.
Most people think they're gay. If they were women, then maybe...
If they were women, they would be just as gay. But 25% hotter.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
Okay, moving on. Jesus. Yeah, so the big thing that's happening in this book is that Verity, and that's her code name, stands for truth, for anyone who doesn't know that.
What?
She gets kidnapped by the Gestapo in France. Looking the wrong way trying to cross the street.
Doyo.
Because she's from Scotland, Britain, where you would look the other way down the street.
You and your silly left side of the road.
I was like, really? That's... okay. actually, because of all the twists that were happening, and they kept expecting to find out that she got kidnapped on purpose looking down the wrong roadside, but no,
right.
She just looked the wrong way. So she's kidnapped by the Nazis, she's tortured by them, and... her account in the first half is her writing notes for Von Linden, who's kind of the head of torture at this place, telling him everything she knows about landing strips and planes and anything that could be helpful to the Nazi effort. She gives him some wireless codes, stuff like that. And at the same time, she's talking about her life back in Britain with her friend Maddie and all that stuff. And then, at the end of her half, when she's all upset and out of time and run out of paper and all that, we flash over to Maddie, her friend, who is hiding out in the French countryside with the resistance. And as Maddie tells the story, you start finding out all of the things happening on the outside that relate to Verity or Queenie's story, such as the woman who interviewed her for the radio spot was actually going in there to make sure she was okay and still alive, and that one of the Nazi women who was looking over Queenie in the prison is helping the resistance.
Right, yeah, you spend the first half of the book thinking that this...
Engel.
Yeah, that Engel is bad, and that Maddie is probably dead, and that Verity's been coughing up tons of information and feeling really, really bad about it, but doing it because, you know, out pain. In the second half, you find out that she's been giving tons of information that is completely false, or at the very best, misleading.
Mm-hmm.
That Engel is actually connected with the resistance, and that Maddie is alive and well, and that Verity Queenie was probably pretty sure of that. Because, you know, if she was interrogating someone, she might show them a picture of their best friend, air quotes, being dead, but... not.
Yeah.
It's like, the Nazis are gonna fake stuff, I'm gonna fake stuff.
Yep. So, basically we find out Verity is the best spy of all time. And then she's shot to death.
Yes, well.
But, we'll talk about that later.
That's part of being a best spy of all time. It's a whole Nathan Hale thing going on there, right?
We should know.
Yeah, right.
So the first part of the book takes place in the Nazi camp, or, it's not really a camp, it's in an old hotel. In the small made-up town in France, and then the second half is the French countryside.
Y'all. Pardon me. The story's told from the point of view of the two, kind of skipping ahead again, the two main characters, the first half by Queenie / Verity, and the second half by Maddie. And so, which one of them is the protagonist?
Yeah, so I actually just listened to our Doomsday Book podcast yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
And we were talking about the co-protagonists of Dunworthy and Kivrin. And it's hard to tell, because Maddie gets her own half of the book, and Queenie is telling her story from Maddie's point of view when she's writing it all down.
Right.
But at the same time, the entire book is revolving around Queenie's imprisonment.
Right. And you could argue that both characters have to change and grow over the course of the book as well. Partly because of their friendship with each other.
their deep and abiding friendship.
Their deep and abiding friendship. Because Maddie really has to... She's someone who needs to take life slightly less seriously some of the time, but also kind of has to learn to go grab things and kind of, like, carve a place out for herself. Queenie is pretty good at those two things already, but I think Maddie is a good influence on her. It helps give her a lot of the strength she has to fool the Nazis for all that time, and, you know, and finally is a good enough friend to keep her from being tortured even more horribly for even more time before her inevitable death. She's basically getting chipped off, it sounds like, to be raped and used for medical experiments.
Yeah. That doesn't sound pleasant.
No.
The Nazis were kind of bad people.
Yeah. A theme that arises more than once in this book.
I'm going to go out on a limb here. Say the Nazis were bad.
The Nazis were bad, guys. Stop sending us emails that say otherwise.
Yeah, stop telling us the story. Pissing us off.
I'm getting tired of comments on the website.
Getting sick of your shit. So we already talked about Maddie and Queenie a bit. Let's bring up a couple of the other characters. We mentioned Engel. She is notable, first of all, for being a female Nazi.
Mm-hmm.
Though
women prisoners traditionally have had female guards, wardens, matrons, whatever. And I don't know if that was true for the Gestapo as well, but it's kind of this weird little touch of old-fashioned chivalry, civility that appears when you have someone in prison to torture them that you'd...
Yeah, wouldn't think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as we mentioned, she essentially is treated like such crap by the Nazis and feels bad for the prisoners that she says, fuck it, and starts helping the resistance, more or less.
Yeah.
She basically befriends Queenie, and we find out that Queenie is just covering for her by not mentioning any of those things in her writing, which probably a good idea.
Yeah, it's a good idea for Engel, for sure.
And Engel gets Queenie's entire account handed over to Maddie and tells her, you know, that they at least got along, and she's sick of this Nazi crap.
Right. And then, let's see, von Linden himself, the head of the local Gestapo, is not exactly sure what his SS rank would be exactly equivalent to. I'm just going to guess major, approximately, by his area of responsibility.
And the rank was something I couldn't pronounce whatsoever.
Like Hopsturmfuhrer.
Yeah.
Hopsturmfuhrer might be closer. I don't know. But I'm reasonably certain, I'd have to go back and double check, that the SS used different ranks than the regular military anyway. But, you know, he was a middle-high ranking officer. Because it sounded like his regional guy was not real happy with the way he was doing everything.
But he's still in charge of the prison.
Right, and I'm going to guess the regional guy was probably approximately a colonel or so, so I'm just going to call him a major. So Major von Linden. plus, major is the most evil-sounding rank for some reason. I just picture a guy with a scar and an eye patch. I don't know why. It's totally random. But he's mostly he's the cold, calculating, like, terrifyingly emotionless, well-educated SS man that's kind of an archetypal character. You know, think Inglourious Bastards for a particular chilling version.
Christoph Waltz's.
Yes, for a particularly chilling version of that archetype. That's totally the type of officer I'm picturing.
Yeah, that guy is scary as shit.
And then just a touch of humanity in the case of von Linden thrown in, because he has a daughter. Apparently he was a school headmaster, which I don't know if that was supposed to be commentary in and of itself.
Headmasters. Yeah, he knows that Verity/Queenie is well-educated, and so he'll talk to her about books.
Right.
That both of them have read. He accidentally lets slip his daughter's name at one point, and she uses that against him later.
Though he does seem to be a master information gatherer and the head torturer at the same time, he doesn't seem entirely comfortable with the wet work part of it. He has other people do the actual physical torturing. He just orders it be done to whatever degree.
Yeah, toward the end of her imprisonment, there's one point where she's yelling at him to be the one to come beat her up, and he doesn't do it.
So he actually is a kind of interesting character, not one that you have a whole lot of sympathy for.
Basically a good guy, you know?
Yeah, right?
Typical.
You know.
Caught in a bad situation, no.
Just doing his part, doing his job, nose to the grindstone.
Yeah, I can't really make that
blue collar man. No, but it is interesting, and I mean, historically, I'm sure plenty of instances of officers, especially Gestapo SS officers, who had to do terrible things, yet had this weird paradox of having a family and having children, and just, it's hard to wrap your head around.
Yeah, like, on one hand, you'd be like, well, I guess they were okay guys, but then they were, like, horribly torturing people, so they were horrible people.
Right.
Like, I don't understand.
And so then on the resistance side, you have...
There's a French family that's hiding Maddie in their barn.
Yes, at risk to themselves, but doing so very graciously. And they're the two daughters in the family are the ones who are most important to the story. Mitrilette, who is basically just an angry young French woman, but who's also effectively the second in command and eventually the head of the local resistance.
Yep.
And her little sister, Amelie, who is a pretty awesome improviser, character, actor in and of her own right.
Amelie.
It's like a grade school girl who has all the adults wrapped around her little finger.
The kind of thing where she's being the little chatterbox girl, but then she's actually doing it to make people go, what?
Right, to distract people or draw information out of them. The perfect errand runner.
Yep.
She's the type of character you'd actually more expect a YA World War II book to be about, honestly. I would actually read that book, for that matter. If you want to do a sequel.
Elizabeth? Wine, Wayne?
Depending on how your sales were for this book, I guess.
You also have Paul. He works for the British military.
Yeah, okay, so I keep calling him, like, Hansy McHansfuck.
Yeah.
Because he could not keep his hands off the ladies, even when they didn't want him to.
A borderline rapist.
So that's bad, but then on the other hand, so he's kind of like, he's almost like a companion character to Von Linden in a way, that he has good and bad things about him, except the good things about Paul, I think, outweigh the bad things. He is, you know, extremely inappropriate. His sexual boundaries are bad, but at the same time, he runs this resistance group very capably. They make mention that before the shit hits the fan, that he's pretty much the only person in France who's never lost someone from his group. And then when their operation starts going wrong, he leads a couple of people around to try to rescue as much of the group as he can and gets himself killed in the process. Like, half the group ends up being wiped out, but at the same time, it was probably the best-case scenario for a horrible worst-case scenario.
Yeah. What I was going to say about Paul is he's a creeper, but he does care more about the resistance than getting some.
Right.
He's not the kind of guy who's going to be like, well, I'm just going to rape this girl here and whatever about the resistance.
Well, it's kind of his line. He's like, well, I'll feel you up during target practice, but I won't actually rape you in the bushes. It's like, Paul.
You're weird.
Go take your aggression out on Nazis instead.
That's not cool.
And then Queenie's brother, Jamie.
Jamie, who's also a fighter pilot.
Yes. And just, I don't know, he's kind of boy version of Queenie to some degree.
Yeah. His plane crashed in the ocean and they had to cut off some of his toes and fingers.
Yeah.
But he kept the other ones by putting them in his mouth.
I thought that was clever.
Yeah, I did too.
It'd be a good time to be one of those people who put your whole fist in your mouth.
Yeah. He's like, take that, people, in the Titanic.
That's right. But he's a... we get glimpses of him here and there. Stand-up guy. We're both pretty sure supposed to be not like a full-fledged love interest, but something to distract to the shippers so that they can read the rest of the damn story.
Uh-huh, for Maddie, not for his sister.
Well, yes, obviously. Although with shippers, that's not necessarily a boundary.
No, that's true. And honestly, Ben and I were both way more expecting Queenie and Maddie to be a thing than Jamie and Maddie to be a thing.
Yeah, I didn't really have a ship in this novel, but if I had to choose one, it would definitely be Queenie Maddie.
I was honestly kind of expecting them to be girlfriends.
The thought honestly inhabited me for a while, because I was going, okay, so we're going to do a 21st century girl power World War II thing. It didn't seem completely unreasonable to that there might be some lesbianism
as
well.
They really loved each other.
They really did.
I mean, you can really love each other in a just friends way, but
right,
they did really love each other, so
right,
we're not just being like...
You're right. And in storytelling, you don't get a lot of instances of people who really love each other and aren't lovers. It just is not an aspect of relationships that gets explored very often, I think.
Well, yeah, just like as we will talk about, or I guess have already talked about, probably considering this will be aired in Gone Girl, the guy and his sister, and people think they're creepy because they like each other so much.
Oh.
And then our final cast, who's significant basically for the fact she gets Maddie flying and then gets her knocked up through the ranks. Not knocked up, but boosts her up through the ranks in the military. Dimpna Withenshaw.
Who is mostly remarkable for having a weird name.
Yep.
And crash landing an airplane.
Driving. I keep wanting to say driving. Piloting a pus moth.
Yes.
But she helps teach Maddie how to fly, and then gets her enrolled in the military, and then gets her on these secret drop missions. So, Dimpna is basically the reason all of this is possible. So go, Dimpna.
Yeah, and Dimpna, I guess, kind of sets a little bit of a background for female pilots, and, well, one, that they exist, and two, that they kind of have their own little... they're kind of tight-knit, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They try to help each other out. I mean, you kind of get the impression pilots are their own fraternity anyway. But then even within that group, you have the women who are like, yeah, you can fly better than all those dudes. Let's see if we can push you up the ranks.
Yeah. Which, understandable.
Very understandable. Also, come on, War Department. What are you doing practicing sexism? If you can have 10 better female pilots than one undertrained dude, why wouldn't you let those women fly?
It's stupid.
Because they can get killed, so they can live in the city and get bombs dropped on them, but they can't get in the fighter shooting the bombers down.
They're too weak.
It's ridiculous.
They're so delicate.
It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And the sad thing is, it's hard to think of female fighter pilots and soldiers and stuff because, you know, they just recently decided, was it the Marines that just decided that women could also be...
combat?
Yeah.
I'm not sure, actually.
But that... oh, fuck. Sorry.
Pause.
Go get that.
All right.
Otherwise, it'll be really annoying.
So,
I can't get out!
Push down. Gabs is currently trapped in the room. All right, so right now, Gabs is... trying to silence the saxophone sectional that is started in the other room of the house. While she's doing that, let's just take a little trip around and see what kind of interesting things we can discover. Oh, she's back. Never mind, everybody.
I heard everything.
Never mind, everybody. No, I was going to say, though, that one of the, you know, another tangent here for a moment, but one of the really interesting things about the newer Battlestar Galactica series is that men and women have equal roles in combat, both in the ground forces and as pilots. They even share the same bunk room, and no one seems to care.
Mm.
There's even one of the few entertainments available to them on this convoy is... like boxing matches, and they even have intersex boxing matches sometimes. And the way it's presented, it doesn't feel weird in the show at all. Which, honestly, it really should. But then at the same time, they have like a 60-year-old guy boxing a 25-year-old guy, and that doesn't seem like a weird mismatch. So why should it seem like a mismatch when he boxes the woman? but yes, another thing of note. One of the many reasons that that show is extremely interesting. but anywho, this is not the Battlestar podcast, though I'd be willing to have that.
I've never seen it, so...
well, we need to fix that. but some of the... were we into the moral issues? I guess we were kind of segueing into
it. We were talking about female pilots helping each other out, and that's one of the big things that, you know, the author admits, that she specifically wanted... tried about two young women involved in the war effort, and she has a pilot and a spy, and a female pilot's pretty rare, and a female spy is pretty rare.
Right.
And then pairing them up together. So she was consciously writing female main characters doing active things in the war duty.
Right, yeah. Though I do think the idea of the female spy character is not that unusual in every form of storytelling, but especially in movies and TV... where any political type of thriller, any beautiful woman is basically immediately suspected of being a spy of some sort.
Yeah, talk about a trope that can go to hell.
Yeah. The old honeypot.
What they should really do is make a movie where there's like a beautiful woman everyone assumes is a spy because she's, you know, beautiful and crafty. And then the totally plain woman who you think is just completely loyal the entire time at the end is like, haha, suckers.
And she's one who's, well, yeah. Well, but the thing is, an aspect of that character trope is always that she's using her sex to get information, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah. How about a James Bond character who's, like, a chick?
Who can be attractive but not, like, ridiculous.
Well, I mean, James Bond character, in theory, should be attractive. Yeah. But then there are the Roger Moore years, so...
In theory.
So who knows?
Well, Daniel Craig is, in theory, attractive. Well. Sorry, internet. But, eh.
Hmm.
Anywho. Again, tangenting.
Tangenting. So, and we've talked a bit about... the main characters as women who love each other but are not lovers, no matter how much you want them to be.
Just really good friends.
And see, Nazis are still bad. Again, guys, stop it. You're just overwhelming us with comments and emails.
Ridiculous.
It's really bad. The issue of torture and information gathering and how the English side uses... torture, I mean, certainly in the sense of more psychological types of tortures, they seem a little less inclined to, you know, burn and bruise and cause direct pain, but plenty willing to deprive you of sleep and feed you misinformation and try to scare the crap out of you. And how that's kind of not okay, but kind of weirdly okay just because it's wartime.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and that it's not just, like, the Nazis are horrible people and the British are the upstanding citizens of the world.
Right. It's more like, we also have to do dirty things.
Yeah, one of the things I thought was pretty interesting is Queenie recognizes that she and Von Linden are kind of the same. That he resorts to physical pain, but that both of them, their job is gathering information from the enemy. And that they're both good at it, and that she's not, you know, innocent, blameless.
Right, yeah. She's virtuous. She's a master manipulator.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, he is, too. They just have different methodologies, basically what she describes.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, a little bit, too, and it's, I mean, it's difficult to find, I've mentioned this in other podcast episodes, but it is difficult to find a war story that is pro-war. I assume they exist. I actually should try to find one and read one sometime.
Yeah.
There are ones that people will argue are pro-war, but I think those people don't see nuance very well, in my experience. But
Is the Iliad pro-war?
Well, okay. But in ancient times, war was definitely a glorious thing. And there are people who in more modern times have seen that, but are quickly disabused of that notion.
Yeah.
World War I is always the one that comes to mind, is the one where all the armies were marching off going, ah, what a fun little row we're going to have, and 6 months from now it'll all be over and we can be gentlemen again, and then it turned out to be the worst thing to ever happen to Europe.
Yeah.
Until the Second World War. So they learned their lesson well, in other words. this idea of just being dirty and filthy and having to do things, and those things being okay in wartime kind of also implies that war is a really shitty time.
Yeah, if something that's morally reprehensible in peacetime is okay in wartime, then maybe war is not a good thing.
Right, like, the worst thing in the world should not suddenly be okay.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I guess the worst thing in the world isn't okay. You have to get pretty dirty for the ends, not to justify the means when you're... Did I say it backwards? God damn it. Reset. You have to get pretty filthy for what you're doing to not be justified when you're fighting the Nazis.
Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. That'll get edited. So some of the plot points. So we've mentioned the big spoiler bombs, but we haven't really analyze them that much. I mean, Queenie, the reveal that she was lying about the information she was revealing the whole time, is really, like, the last big piece of information you need to understand her character.
Uh-huh. Maddie's reading all this and realizes that she was just making shit up off the top of her head.
Right.
And, when you think about her time in prison, you know, she's talking about all these other prisoners think she's completely despicable, spitting at her and insulting her and thinking she's a piece of shit because she's giving up all this information.
Right.
When really she's taking a different tact. And that these things she's underlined and emphasized is actually code for the resistance to go bust into the place and destroy it.
Right, to fulfill the mission that she had been sent to France to accomplish in the first place. She's still able to help the mission get accomplished despite having been imprisoned almost from the first day she set foot in France. That whole left versus right thing with the traffic. They should have landed her in Japan. No one would have come. They drive on the left side of the road.
Yeah, she totally looks like
that. Right. There are lots of pale blonde women walking around Japan during World War II, right? No? Not so much?
Probably not.
All right. Maybe my history is messed up. may I watch too much anime? Every hair color exists in Japan, apparently. Even the ones that are impossible. But she's a very creative and very strong character. And, I mean, she takes a lot of abuse.
Yeah.
And to me, the thing that separates her just a little bit, maybe, from some characters, because there are, again, storytelling, wartime, prisoner of war, all those kinds of tropes that exist. The character that gets tortured, but the character who gets tortured and has to go a lot of physical punishment is fairly common.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them break and some of them don't, depending on how realistic the author is. But to me, it seems like the harder part would be, okay, so you're feeding them all this information that isn't real information, but you're giving them information.
Giving them enough real information.
And they're still hurting you, because that's what they're going to do. And then all of the other prisoners, like the one possible source of sympathy you might have in that horrible environment, hate your guts because they think you're giving them information.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like she doesn't have any compassion for them. We see her write about how bad she feels for the other people who are being tortured, sometimes right in front of her.
Yeah.
And, like, she shouts for them to leave them alone at least once. And somehow manages to keep going despite all of that. Despite not really having much in the way of outside help.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other big twist is the shooting, which is during the horribly botched operation.
Yeah, to save the prisoners.
Which is not entirely the fault of the resistance. Basically, there were more Nazis hanging about the countryside than they thought.
Yeah.
So they weren't able to get to the guards fast enough. They took the prisoners hostage, reinforcements show up, and pretty much cut them to pieces.
Uh-huh.
And so, during the hostage process, they shoot a couple prisoners right away to get everyone's attention. Which the whole scene was, I guess, not really surprising, but I found it a little shocking anyway. It was a lot more brutal than the things that had been implied up to that point.
Yeah, yeah. It was a typical, like, Nazi, like...
Right.
We literally don't give a fuck about these guys.
Right. Life,
we will kill them.
Life is meaningless to us, so listen. And so they are basically threatening to give Queenie special treatment.
Yeah.
Which you pretty much understand in wartime. I mean, she's a woman, we're going to rape the fuck out of her. And, yeah. Plus, we've already discovered from context that her likely destination is a prison camp where, instead of being in the work part of the camp, she'll have medical experiments performed on her until they kill her.
Yeah.
Don't go read up on that, by the way. It's disturbing.
Yeah, for your own sanity, please.
but they have a... I guess I'll let you explain the Kiss Me Hardy thread.
Oh. Okay, well, Queenie is, you know, well-educated, so she's kind of a nerd. And she kind of scatters these literary and historical references throughout her own thing. So, you know, something pilots like to reference is Peter Pan, because you... I don't remember the exact quote, but you, like, take a second ride at that star and straight on till morning. And she mentions people who have, like, badass dying phrases.
Right, great last words.
Yeah, and Nelson, Admiral Nelson, before he dies, you know, said, "Kiss me, Hardy," quick, I think, to his second-in-command, which is... makes people giggle, I guess, sometimes. Yeah, super kiss, but whatever. And this is something that people who know her would know these things that she likes to, you know, point out and reference from whatever. And so during this whole Nazi hostage-taking thing, Queenie figures out... she doesn't know for a fact that Maddie's out there, but guesses she is.
Right.
And steps up and says, "Kiss me, Hardy, quick!" And Maddie goes, "Good last words," basically. And then,
yeah.
And then shoots her so she doesn't get taken off to this torture camp.
Right. To die horribly over the course of weeks.
Yeah.
So, I guess the big... I guess the big moral question of the book is that, like, the right thing to do there? Certainly you're supposed to think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to argue against it, in my opinion, but...
yeah, I feel like if someone said, you can either shoot Ben in the head, or he's going to be taken off to get horribly tortured for a month, which one do you choose? I'd be like, well, I'm technically killing him, yes, but I'm also saving him from... all that horror.
Yeah, it's almost the thing of you can, you know, the terminal illness choice of you can live for a year and do everything, or we can do nothing and you can live for 3 months but probably be more comfortable.
Yeah, better quality of life.
But in a much more dramatic way.
Or in a zombie apocalypse.
Right, when they start to turn, you just take them out then and there.
Yep.
My answer, yes.
They're not your friend anymore.
That's right. They're now a zombie. They want your flesh.
Yeah. Which is not going to happen to Queenie, but, you know.
It's too bad. If she turned into a zombie, she could have fucked up some Nazis.
It's true.
But she at least left behind enough intelligence for Maddie and the Resistance to be able to blow up the Gestapo headquarters in Orme.
Yep.
So, that's a win.
Yep.
Be much easier now. You just use a single GPS-guided bomb on a nighttime air raid, and it'd be done. Let's see, so...
Yeah. We already mentioned Nazis are bad, so...
Nazis are still bad.
Nazis are still, in fact, bad.
Friendship is good.
But yeah, Ben and I concluded friendship, therefore, must be better than Nazis.
Right. Use one of those greater than signs.
Yep.
And definitely some girl power ideas in this book. Ooh.
And most of the, not all of the, but a lot of the pivotal characters are female. The two main characters, the Nazi female officer who helps the resistance, two of the, you know, big players in the resistance who are girls.
Yeah, so for men, you have a co-protagonist's brother.
Uh-huh.
You have the chief torturer on one side and the head of the local resistance cell on the other. And your head of the local resistance is a flawed character. Definitely a girl power book, I'd say.
The only good one's the brother, which it obviously means this author has no brother, because brothers are horrible.
It would be the worst, yes. I hope if I was going to be taken off to be tortured for a month, I'd at least be able to make that month as miserable as possible for my captors. talk them into shooting me early, if nothing else. So let's see. Any points of interest that we haven't touched on yet?
Nope.
Not particularly. Strengths and weaknesses of the writing.
So overall, even though Maddie's storyline in the second half is the big reveal of what's actually going on, I actually found Queenie's narrative more compelling than Maddie's. More interesting, and her voice was stronger.
I agree. She was a really distinct and really well-written character that first half of the book, for sure.
Yeah.
And then Maddie was... I mean, she wasn't a weak and bad character.
No.
It was just... it was hard to live up to that first half, I think, more than anything.
I agree.
And Maddie came across a little bit more as the self-insertion type of character.
In the second half, relies a little more on, here's what's happening to Queenie, and you get, like, the second mm-hmm. view of everything. And so the interest in the second half is really more of, here's how things were different than you thought, more than,
right.
here's the interesting character.
Right. I agree with that. And then... actually, this has more to do with my opinion on the book than the actual writing, I think. but just that first half, especially, I couldn't really tell if the book was more about spies or friendship. And then I finally decided it was more about friendship. But I'd already decided if it was about friendship, I wasn't going to like it. But then I wasn't sure if I liked it or not. So, a very strange experience for me.
Ben's still trying to figure out if he liked this book.
I really don't know. I'm not sure I could recommend it, but I wouldn't recommend against it.
I personally really enjoyed it. I read it fast. As a... usually we record podcasts right after we read the books, and I did read this and then lend it to Ben, and then...
and then a few weeks elapsed.
Yeah, before we recorded.
Partly because of time travel. She showed her teeth at me, guys.
I've forgotten elements of the story, and I'm not sure if that's just because I read it fast, or because I read enough that old things get pushed out of my head, or whatever
right.
the reason is.
If you don't read it two or three times over the course of years.
On the one read-through, it's not so memorable that I remembered everything, but it is memorable enough that I still remember definitely reading the Queenie part.
Yeah, I think a year from now, I will remember enough of it for it to stand out a little bit above whatever the baseline level is.
Yeah.
And so... that'll incline me towards it more positively, but until that extra time has passed, I just won't really know for sure.
But I thought it was good, and I would recommend it to people, especially people who like YA, or people who like female characters in books.
Well, I think as YA, it might be better, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because, say, a teenager reading the book... unless they're me, probably has less exposure to things like what happened during World War II
uh-huh.
and just like the kinds of tropes that are used in the book, even though most of them are at least slightly modified. I mean, it's definitely not like a generic trope-filled book, even though almost everything in it really can be traced back to a trope, arguably.
Yeah.
But if you weren't as familiar with those, if you hadn't run into them as many times as me, I think it would be... I think that would help, honestly, because it wasn't... a little bit of my issue with it is that, to me, it wasn't totally fresh, either.
Okay. I didn't have that problem.
But, you know, again, I have read arguably too much about World War II. especially when I was younger. Like, that was a really deep fascination of mine for, like, a solid 5-6 years.
I remember that.
So, let's see. Oh, yeah. What are we reading right now?
I just picked up Boy Meets Boy by David Levithan.
You're on a Levithan kick.
Yeah, I just decided I had always thought some of his books looked interesting. I figured I might as well read them all at the same time.
There you go.
And it's kind of funny so far in that the main character's high school is, like, weird alternate reality high school where, like, the star quarterback is an open drag queen who, like, runs down the halls in drag and, like, everyone thinks she's awesome and, like, his school is just completely full of, like, gay love.
I see.
And then this guy that he meets from another school just goes to, like, a normal school.
All right. So that's where you can get your... That's where you get some of your interests from in that book.
Yeah.
I am reading Boomerang by Michael Lewis, which is about the financial crisis, specifically how it affected key countries in Europe, and presumably tying it back in the United States at the end. It's interesting, though it kind of makes me angry at times while I'm reading it. basically because most of the people involved in the financial collapse were greedy, stupid, or both. Mostly both.
Yeah.
and, yeah. But, anyway, if you want to tell us anything about anything.
Unless you want to tell us Nazis are good and we don't want to hear
it. Yeah, stop doing that, guys. Seriously. You can leave a comment on our website at novelideaspodcast.com.
You can email us at novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
We are on Twitter, novelideaspod.
And you can also find us on iTunes.
Yeah, and if you do that, then rate, review, etc. Help people find the show.
Yeah.
Next week, we'll be reading something.
This
is actually being recorded as a punch-in, so we're recording it in April of 2013. You might be hearing it in 2017. I don't know.
I doubt that.
Well, I'll be surprised if we're still going in 2017, but who knows? Maybe we'll have a nationally syndicated show by then.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess that is going to be all.
Yeah.
So we'll see you next time.
Bye.